Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great one for you tonight. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
Doing good, Jeff. So I just thought we'd start off the show and talk about how you were a little star on YouTube this week, demoing an amp on at the Pedal Expo.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That was a great little amp. It had a lot of tone to it. I could generate a lot of harmonics from it. I think you can hear it a little bit in the video. I know it was noisy there when we were recording, but I was able to get a lot of different sounds out of that little guy.
Yeah, definitely. It was a great little show. I mean, we definitely want to thank Lonnie Spector for putting on that good show.
And yes, the LA Guitar Pedal.
Yeah, Guitar Pedal Expo.
That's it.
So it was a great little show. And then actually just wanted to, you know, talk about a couple of the videos that I got up today, actually. Some Celestion speaker shootout. It's actually up to about 2:30 in the morning getting those out. So got them up, and they're, you know, they're fantastic little speakers. It was a fun little demo to do. It was something different for me because I'm...
Yeah, and it was good because you could hear the differences. I mean, you could tell there was a slight difference in... Well, you had three different models.
Yeah, I had the Vintage 30, the Classic Lead 80, and then the Creamback, which is a newer speaker for Celestion, which we'll hear about later with our guest. So if you want to check out those videos, you can go to my YouTube channel. Look up Selenium is my YouTube channel, or you can just search by my name, Scott Sill, and you can check those out. Fantastic little speakers. It was fun for me because, you know, as we've talked about before, I'm not a big modding person, so for me just to get in there and rip out speakers and change them out, it's fun for me. It's not something I normally do every day.
Yeah, and also too, just to mention, there's two videos, one just the clean sound and one with the dirt, so you can hear both distorted and clean. So it was interesting.
Yeah, and I definitely want to make sure to mention and let everyone know that we also have a live chat room on our website, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com. Provides an opportunity to, you know, provide us comments. Even provide some questions that we try to fit in during the show. So visit our website, flowguitarenthusiast.com. And also, today with a special show, because we have a giveaway coming up later in the show. So you want to make sure you drop this phone number down, 323-203-0815. And you'll want to have that number ready to answer a trivia question. And if you want some help on that trivia question, visit our Facebook site. And there's some pretty big clue there to help you answer the trivia question.
What are we giving away? What are we giving away?
Well, we're giving away a vintage Celestion Vintage 30. There we go.
There you go.
So we're giving away a Celestion Vintage 30. Also, if we have the first caller in, we'll give away a Celestion shirt, too. So not only can you sound good, but you can look good.
There you go.
So why don't we get started and
okay.
Introduce our guests. We have in studio with us Rick Skillman, who is the artist relations for Celestion, and he's also the OEM manager of North America, correct? Or is it...
I travel anywhere.
Yeah. Anywhere.
Yeah, global. Basically, the lower 48 and actually some customers up in Canada. Yeah, so North America, for lack of better terms.
Yeah, so we're very happy to have him in. He works with just about anybody you name as your guitar god. He pretty much works with them. So let's get started. So tell us about Celestion Speakers. So, you know, they're the longest running speaker company out, correct?
Yeah, started in 1924 and all the way up until 1953 when we had our first guitar amp customer, which was Vox. Before that time, we were known for home audio systems. They provided speakers to, like, the Royal Navy. for use in, you know, submarines, all hands on deck type stuff, to public address systems in the middle of a town where you have a big speaker up on a, you know, in the center of town up on the pole there, and you know, saying whatever needed to be said across the city there, so everybody could respond accordingly. And so yeah, they were very popular and amongst the audio folks. And then yeah, 1953, the guys at Vox were putting something together, and they ran down to their local radio spares type of place, which would be like our Radio Shacks, for lack of better words, and they pulled one off the shelf and put it in there. And it was like a little AC, what would become like an AC-15, I guess, maybe a little AC-10, low wattage amp, and that speaker is basically what is now the Alnico Blue.
Wow.
So it's yeah, it's lived a long life. So
I want to interrupt real quick just to kind of give people a little bit of perspective on Rick. Tell us what you're, because he's a guitar player. He gigs regularly in a country rock band or country band.
Yeah. It depends on the song, but yeah, we're built
the Dixie, Chris Lozano and the Dixie Playboys.
Yeah, Chris
with
Lozano.
Arnie.
Yeah,
Arnie Newman.
Arnie Newman. A lot of people. He was Reba McEntire's guitar player in a hot country band in the 90s called Shenandoah, which had several top tens. And Arnie's incredible.
I just wanted to ask you, so everybody gets a little bit of a perspective where you're coming from. What do you use? What's your gear?
What's my gear? Well, it's probably have to ask my wife. She keeps better track of my gear. Yeah. But no, seriously, yeah, we play 8 to 12 nights a month, and we're doing everything from big outdoor shows to nightclubs. And I have your two basic setups, which consist of about 10 different amps. But these days I've been using a Egnator, the modular series.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an M4 preamp. So, and this is stuff he builds out of his shop in Detroit. And so it's a preamp, you know, two preamp, power amp, two power amp he designed, I think, for Randall, and RT250. So it's a 50 watts per side stereo rig, and that goes through a Line 6 Echo Pro, which was the rack mount delay unit they built. And then my pedal board's a Univibe tuner, MIDI switcher, and a wah. And then for my single channel amps, I have a couple favorites. One's a 65 Royal Albert, which is basically your Black Crowes, you know, shake your money maker tone in a box.
Mm-hmm.
And a Carp amp.
Mm-hmm.
Carp is Eric Carpenter's a local builder out there in Norco, California, and it's more Fullerton inspired, if you will. And Matchless Clubman. There's a Wizard. Wizard for some of the higher gain stuff.
Which Celestians do you use?
These days, I've been leaning on the Creamback M quite a bit. And I always have a gold mic'd up as well. So I tend to mix speakers, which is a great thing to do for you tone chasers out there. It just gives you options. Not only in front of the amp do you hear a blend of different things happening, but it also gives you a options depending on the venue. And in some you're going to find that the a ceramic speaker sounds better. Sometimes the Alnico's better. If you can do both, you got a very friendly sound man, and he's willing to throw two mics your way, then you mic each one, and you can blend it, you know, as you would. And so those are my main go-tos, but I have cabs with H's. I'm not short on cabinets and speakers, but the main ones I'm running right now would be the Creambacks and the our reissue Greenback. I have a 412, an older Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
1960 412 with those.
Well, let's go a little bit into the different models, because I was on the site, and there's so many different 12s that you guys make. You
right.
make a lot of different speakers. Can you kind of give us a little bit of a clue? I'll mention different ones and kind of give me an idea what kind of sound that is. So,
sure.
Okay, so like for example, the Celestian Gold.
So the gold, what I mentioned earlier, the blue was our first, became a guitar speaker after its original life. And the gold, the blue only handles 15 watts.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously people would be nervous putting in a higher powered, people say we rate conservative, but we really rate AES, which is Audio Engineering Society. And that way of rating things is what we stick to. And on the 15 watt speaker can take a little more punishment, but it is not a inexpensive speaker. Alnico is aluminum, nickel, and cobalt. And cobalt's a precious metal, so it's just a lot of money into these things. So we saw that as the amps were growing and the need where people wanted to put 30, 40 watts, 112 combo, we didn't have an Alnico that would address that. So the gold was built. And I remember because I called Brad Paisley, his tech, first. And we spoke, and he was using an Alnico Blue knockoff that was 30 watts.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of did the what if thing, and we ended up developing the gold, and we shipped it to him, and he was floored by the tone, and really wanted to do an advert about it. He was just bowled over that this thing sounded so good. So that's what we ended up going after. And so the gold, with the Alnico is gonna, what happens, the reason it sounds different, or we have that as a model compared to the others, is when Alnico gets hot, it starts to compress, and it gets very buttery sounding. And the hotter it gets, the more it does, it gets sweeter and sweeter. Well, the same was, the same for the blue, except for there was a limit that some people hit too easily.
Mm-hmm.
You got to, drummers, they tend to hit hard. So you're trying to play catch up with the drummer and throwing your boost pedal in front of your amps, and all of a sudden your blue's on fire, and that'll make a man cry. So the gold was just simply to address that need for higher power, yet an Alnico. And that's the sound it does compared to, a ceramic speaker. So it's gonna break up a little different. It's gonna compress, and it just has a very unique tone compared to a ceramic.
Now the G12s, the M, the Creamback, the H,
right,
and all those are all ceramic, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And the ceramics, so the M designates that it's a medium magnet. That's what M is. And
okay.
The G12H is a heavy magnet. Then we have T-style magnets and K-magnets. And that's where you get the variances on model names. And, the M is going to be a little less low end. And it's all a sum of the ingredients. So you have the magnet that's going to offer part of the low end. There's a resonant frequency. So most Celestians are a 75 hertz cone. You have the G12H Heritage as a 55 hertz, and that was like the Hendrix speaker. So like a lot of guys playing single coil, like Strat players, they want to know Hendrix got, it's the bass cone. So he was able to get that nice
right. I posted on our Facebook page some of the Celestians I have, and I have a gold back or a black back, a black face.
Right.
G12M, and it says 55 on that one.
Right. That's one that actually we're always thinking, like in our Heritage line, which are built in the UK to the early specs. We're always trying to come out with, what's next based on the history of what we used to do. And actually, we're considering, maybe the 55 hertz M, because you can't get that right now. You can get a 55 hertz H, but the 55 hertz M is something that we don't do. And the blackbacks, and in the 70s, we also had the creambacks. That was basically when the factory ran out of green plastic.
So there, it's basically a greenback, but at 50. But the greenback isn't 55, or is it?
No. There. Well, the one you have is because we used to do both a 55 hertz and a 75.
Okay.
We're doing it in the H, both models, but in the M's we currently just do the 75. But there, that said, there are a lot of fans of the 55 hertz M, because the cone, you get more bass response, but not quite the thump of an H.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people that, there's fans in both corners, and most of them are willing to cross. And H lovers will still like an M, but you're either an H guy or an M guy usually. And then some people mix them. You know, I mean, Dr. Z has a, you know, cabinet where you get one of each, you know, an H and an M. And so people have fun with it. It's all about finding what works for you. And
yeah, I have it in a Princeton. It sounds great with a telly.
Oh, yeah.
Like at about six, it's just breaking up just, a little bit, but it's just right there.
Yeah, ride your volume knob like a new bicycle and you're good to go.
So, Rick, we have a question actually from our live chat room. Before I get that, I just want to again remind people you can call 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815 if you have a question for Rick. And as I said, the first person calls gets his nice Celestion shirt. Now, the question from the chat room is there any ceramic speakers that have a similar cone as the blue or the gold speaker
that you're aware of? First question is a good one. I would have to look at that. If we're either doing a break or after the show, I'll be sure to post back to the website because... yeah, actually, I am almost positive that if it's not, you see, there's certain things you discuss and then certain things you don't, because out there in radio land, there's lots of people listening, including probably some of my friends from other places that might be speakers. But yeah, I will. I'll post on that. I'm going to talk to Dr. Decibel because, to be honest with you, that cone I do not believe is dissimilar from one found on one or two other models. But off the top of my head, I don't want to give bad information, so.
Okay. Well,
but thanks for writing in and
yeah.
With such a good question that I can't answer. So.
Well, we'll have it up on our Facebook page, and Rick can post it up on there.
Absolutely.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you, how did you get involved with Celestion Speakers? Because you were a touring musician and a daytime gigger, or a day worker like a lot of us.
Right.
And
right.
Then you got involved into the music industry and going to Celestion Speakers. How did that occur, and then what got you into the artist relations side of things?
So for years, yeah, I worked in actually the home building industry and then would go off at night and gig. And I always wanted to work in the music business. And just like everybody else out there, I was, you know, that's right when internet forums were starting to blow up and I found myself stuck on the various gear forums at night, reading about the latest and greatest, and I was basically doing tone testing with about every manufacturer's amp out there. And one cool thing about the boutique market is you can usually call and the owner of the company answers the phone. So
yeah.
I got relationships with you know a lot of these guys and became friends. And then, oddly enough, a year previous, I went to Celestion's website to gather my own information about some greenbacks I had, you know, doing the date codes and all that. And I saw that they were looking for somebody in the U.S., and I made up a resume. I didn't really have one together because I liked my day job was fine. But I threw one in there, and I never heard back, and I never really gave it two thoughts. And then, you know, time goes on. A year or two later, I'm actually hanging out with an amp manufacturer out in Corona, and it was James from Bad Cat Amps. And in the parking lot, I received a phone call from a gentleman who's the vice president of Celestion and just said, hey, we'd like to talk to you. We saw your resume. And actually, first was a voicemail, and I played it for James, and James said, let me call him back. So it was actually James called the guy back and called Paul back and said, yeah, I'm calling from Rick Skillman's phone and he'd be great for the job. So that was probably early January. It was just after the first of that year. And then I met them all at NAMM Show, and I think I did like five interviews over the course of 2 days.
Wow.
And my daughter had just been born the week before, so I was literally just tired and hadn't slept and probably wearing the same jeans for 3 days, just really looked tore up. But I gave it my all and put in my pitch, and a week later they called and offered the job.
Wow, very cool. So doing the artist relations, can you tell us kind of a story, or, you know, kind of what you do when you work with different artists and kind of how you help them if there's any good examples you can provide without, you know, releasing any information you're not supposed to, it would be great.
No, yeah, no. Well, they're just like we are. They just get, you know, paid a lot of money. So, yeah, I mean, when I started at Celestion, they had already had a Partners in Tone program. That's the name of our endorsement program. They already had it started, but it was kind of, you know, it was still a bit juvenile. You know, still it was still somewhat new. So we kind of leaned on a lot of pictures of, you know, we had Jimi Hendrix. And we were the only company, actually, at least at the time, allowed to use Jimi Hendrix's name and likeness for no charge, because we were the only company at the time who had ever approached his family and asked. Apparently that a lot of other companies were using his name and his pictures and coming out with signature things that he had never knew about, because he's been passed on for so many years. So we asked his family said, yeah, go on, use it. So anyways, moving forward, we just started talking about artists and our advertising and what we had to do to convey to the world that, you know, to the guitar players out there, that most of the songs that they grew up listening to or loving or wanting to sound like was a Celestion speaker. So we started the program and started really focusing on the program, if you will. And it was a pretty cool fraternity to belong to if you're a guitar, you know, a guitar hero of some sorts. And it's a very simple program. There's no big contracts. We don't pay anybody. It's very simple and straight ahead. That we get a photograph and a quote from the artist about Celestion. We supply them with a couple speakers for the tour. And if something does go down on their rig and they need help, we support them and make sure that we courier it out to whatever part of the world they're in, and so their tech can get it loaded up. And now I think we're about 150 artists, and I would say that it's most of them are household names amongst guitar players, which we're very proud of. And it's just not anybody who's had a pop hit in the last 5 years. I mean, it's well rounded, from the Robin Fords and Landau's and the Tone guys to the Chicken Pickers to the Drop Tune Metal guys, and you know, and every, you know, Kerry King from Slayer,
your speakers are used for like a, you know, just a wide cross section of different types of music, from jazz, rock, country. I mean, pretty much everything.
Yeah, we've been really fortunate to you know, as Tone is the word Tone, it's become bigger and it's become a thing of its own, and we've been there for it. And there's not one genre that I can't say that we, you know, we're not used in, really. You know, even guys who, yeah, you said jazz. I mean, he's used Celestions because, you know, they just like the way they sound, and they're a little rounder sounding. You know, they have a little more mid-range than other models out there, and if it works, if it puts a smile on your face, you know, that's why 31 Flavors has all those ice creams, you know. It's all good.
I think people don't realize, because you serve, you know, manufacturers directly as OEM,
right,
they don't realize that a lot of companies, predominantly, there's Celestions in their amps. I mean, in their speaker cabinets for their amps. I mean, you guys are pretty out. I mean, you're pretty dominant in the market.
Yeah, we enjoy a good bit of market share for sure, in the top selling brands. But I guess what is important for people to know is that we're still super passionate about, you know, and we really take our time. Sometimes people want us to hurry a little more, but it's just, you know, we have a long history and we're not going anywhere, but, you know, trying to go up, and we want to make sure we get it right. We just don't want to, you know, it takes hundreds of hours and thousands of dollars and a lot of time to engineer a speaker correctly and make it do what you want. It's actually harder to put distortion into a speaker than it is to build a cleaner speaker, because mm-hmm. it's got to distort in a beautiful way. So what you're trying to do is make the speaker go off axis and go sideways in a controlled, you know, it's like controlled chaos, and that's how you want the speaker to break up. And I've been told, you know, I'm not the engineer for the company, but I've been told it's not very easy to do. So and thankfully that, you know, people have responded and we're still going, and we always joke that it takes thousands of hours to invent something, and it takes a 12-pack on a Saturday night to copy something. So we're going to stick to what we're better at, and that's in creating. So.
So can you tell us kind of, you have, so one of your signature speakers is an Eddie Van Halen's signature speaker. Can you talk about the process of how that comes about? When you work with someone like that, how do you develop a speaker that has got their name on it?
Right. Well, we've only done two. I think Ed was the first, and I was actually contacted by Fender back in probably 2006, 7, somewhere around there, 6 or 7. And they asked for samples of the Heritage Greenbacks. And they needed a lot of samples. And so we shipped them over. And then I remember visiting their facility. And in the back room, I saw this tattered-looking old Marshall 412 with most of the Toldex ripped off. And I immediately knew who it belonged to because I'd done my homework. You know, I've been, you know, playing guitar for 31 years, and Eddie was certainly on my radar since I was a kid. And so once I guessed who the artist was, then there was further talks about that, you know, it was going to be for his EVH product line. He was in, and Fender would be the OEM. And then he expressed interest in having a signature speaker, and we talked about it, and we'd never done it before, but it was like, who would you rather have at the helm of a signature program than Ed Van Halen? He's so influential in what he's done as a player. You can hear his songs, his music, or his lead playing anywhere, and you know it's him. So, long they're all long stories, so this long story shorter is I got to go to his house and a few times, and we met at the 5150 Studios. And I knew driving through the front gates that this was either going to be the best day of my life or the worst day of my life, meeting my hero. And you could not have asked for a cooler experience. He was super nice. We sat in the room. He just very simply told us that he wanted the greenback, but he would do his artwork. And we asked him, you know, we said, do you want anything custom, a different dust cap, different doping, you know, any component of the speaker? And he said, no, I've always, through all my amps, my different manufacturers, I've always loaded my cabs with greenbacks. And he just wanted the basic one, and he was happy for us to disclose it to the public. Actually, we launched it, where his amps were launched, and then we were, you know, we put together the fancy box they come in and all that. And when we launched it, for a few days before we sent out the press release saying what it was, I was reading the gear forums, and as a speaker manufacturer, you always want to know what you're dealing with. And it was funny because people were going, oh, I think it's a classic Lead 80 with this done to it, or I think it's a T75. A couple of people thought it was a greenback, but then some people thought it might have been, you know, anything with about that size magnet. Everybody was guessing. And some people had it way off. They're like, I think it's a vintage 30, and it's a different magnet, different cone, you know. So, yeah. You know, and bottom line is, then we said, no, it's actually a Heritage Greenback. Everyone said, oh yeah, I thought so. So yeah. So I mean, it was, and we wanted to be open about it. And one thing I'll say here was, I don't get on the radio every day, We gave him every option under the sun. It's like, and he said, why would I try to rewrite what you guys have already done? You know, there's nothing I'm going to do. Just having my logo on it's part of a product family. It made sense. But as far as re-engineering anything, he was, he talked about torture tests on listening to things and what he puts his gear through to see if it's going to make the tour or make the record. It's pretty serious stuff. So it's, and then... That was the one speaker, so that's how that came about. It was just a couple meetings. And then I had met George Lynch years ago. And George was always a friend, and he had a cool signature speaker with Eminence. And he was up for a change. That ran a successful course, but he wanted to try something different. And he told me back in the back in the 70s, Eddie was well known for mixing a Greenback with a JBL. Randy Rhodes was known for mixing an Altec and a Celestion, and George always mixed a Fane and a Celestion. And what happened, they all loved the Greenbacks, but when they were recording with these non-master volume amps, just dimed up, is as they started to compress a little bit, just to get extra clarity and detail, they would mic up one of these clean speakers and then just mix the two together. And so George came to us and said, hey, I'd really love to have something with the clarity of my Fanes, but the mid-range of the Celestion. So really, I want the tone of a Greenback, but can it handle more power and then still have the clarity in the top end more like my Fane? And we had one of our lead engineers in the UK put together a product. It was the first one we sampled, and he gave it a thumbs up. There was no, 12 iterations of, or they got it right on the first one. George is great to do business with because he did all of his label design work. And at first I didn't know, I'd known George, but I thought he was going to come back with a logo with like Bengal tiger stripes. But he said, no, I want people to be proud to have it, whether it's in a $3,000 hand-wired boutique amp or if it's in the back of their, 1977 acoustic combo, or whatever. He wanted it to be a more subdued logo and more old school looking. And I was just with Dave Friedman today, and that's their favorite speaker over there. They love it. And it has a cool sound, but it has a different purpose. The Creamback is its own thing. The Lynchback, so we do have a lot of models, like you said earlier, but they all kind of do something, but it all depends on your playing and what you partner them with. So it's...
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you, it's kind of related to our trivia / giveaway for today. So what was the very first day that you started at Celestion?
My first day was March 1st, 2005.
Okay.
My official start date.
All right. So what we're going to do is I'm going to tell you about the trivia question and tell you how you can win a Celestion Vintage 30. And we're going to take a break, and then when we come back from break, it's open for the first caller that can answer the question correctly will win the speaker. So here's how you do it. If you go to our Facebook page, if you haven't been there, or if you go on to Celestion's website, there is a way to date a speaker, and you want to be able to know how to do that. So for example, if you have a speaker that was made on Christmas Day of 2012, how you would date that, you would see 25MX on it. That would tell you that was made on the 25th of 2012, December. So, if anybody can call in and tell us what the Celestion code is for Rick's first day at Celestion, which will be March 1st, 2005, will win the Celestion Vintage 30. So make sure you call 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815 when we're back from the break.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
The Flow here. You're listening to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show on latalkradio.com.
Scott here from the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, and I have an exciting contest to tell you about. We will be giving away a Big Muff Pie with a Tone Wicker option on April 29th when the legendary Mike Matthews and the good folks from Electroharmonix are our guests. This pedal is autographed by Mike Matthews and sounds killer. To be a winner, like our Facebook page and visit our website, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com, and leave a comment on this contest story. Make sure to tune in Monday, April 29th to see if you're the winner. Take it away, Mike.
Rock and roll!
We are back, and the phones are ringing. So let me go ahead and take our first call here. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Can I have your name and where you're calling from?
My name is Joe, and I'm calling from San Jose.
Joe from San Jose, welcome. Do you have a question for Rick?
I have an answer to the trivia question.
All right. What is your answer?
The answer is QC, March 2005. U is 2005. C is March.
Okay, how would it be written on the speaker? Not to be totally technical, but...
It would be 1QC for the first day of March 2005.
Should we give it to him?
Is it? That sounds...
He figured it out.
You're right, but I think you've got it backwards. It'd be 1CQ is what the answer would be, because it's it's day.
Yeah, 1CQ.
Month.
Yeah.
So
1CQ.
But that
would
be
0-1CQ.
That would be correct. So you've won the Celestion Vintage 30. So congratulations.
Oh, right.
Hey, rock on.
I'm gonna pair that with my. I got two cabs. I got two Lead 80s in both of them, so I think I'll have something to pair with it.
Oh, great.
You have.
I was asking in the chat room about what would be a good speaker to pair with a Lead 80, so I guess
that's
30.
Yeah, that's a great speaker actually. They pair well together. My Carp 212. That's the pair I have in there.
So, oh, cool.
So just make sure you're available on your phone after the show, and we'll give you a call, and we'll work out the details on how to get you the speaker.
Absolutely, that'd be awesome.
We'll call you right after the show.
Awesome. Thank you so much, and a big shout out to the guys over at mylistpaul.com for all the good stuff that Selenium puts up there as well. So.
Thanks. All right. Okay. See ya.
Hey, thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Right, thank you very much.
Right on, thanks.
Do we have any other callers?
No, but we have another question from the chat room. They were asking which speakers are still made in the UK. Is all models made everywhere?
No. Actually, so all of... get your pen and paper ready. All of the Heritage series. So that's the Heritage M's.
Mm-hmm.
Heritage H's. The EVH, the Alnico's, both blues and golds, and 10-inch golds, and the G1265 Heritage. I mean, we make 400 speakers a day in the UK. So
those are all in UK.
Yeah, we build those in the UK on the line. Robin Ford actually asked... He used to send his tech out scouring the eBays of the world and stuff, looking for G1265s. And we always wondered why he wasn't just getting the ones that we made. And then he had a misconception. He had a misunderstanding. And eventually I met with him not too far from here in Southern California, and his tech at the time at his lockout. And he had his Dumble rig set up, and he had the new ones I just shipped, and he had old ones, and he started playing, and he had his big grin. He's like, wow, you guys did it. Are these similar? Are they made in the UK? Well, what's going on? I said, not only are they made in the UK, they're made by the same people. We've had people that have been working at Celestion for 30 plus years. So when those were originally a Marshall OEM speaker in the 412s for like the very late 70s, early 80s, that's one we decided to bring back because we noticed it had a lot of fanfare. So,
mm-hmm.
But we make several speakers in the UK. There's a few manufacturers that we make things for the UK. We make where they specify. I mean, a lot of it's down to logistics.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some stuff that we can make in the UK that might be in an OEM box, and we won't necessarily specify it was made for there was a time frame, logistics, where they're at, why we made them there. But then, I get the question a few times a week of how do I tell if my speaker's made in England. Generally, it'll stay made in England. That's what we do. Especially there was a transitional time. But nowadays, I mean, it's pretty cut and clear. If it was made in the UK, it'll say made in the UK,
mm-hmm.
Especially for the retail.
We have another question from the chat room. Does the K speaker have a lot more highs than the T, or is there a difference in that? Or
I would say the K has more mid range. So okay. In a G12 T75, which is used in several, but most famous for the current Marshall 412 1960, that speaker has bigger low ends and bigger tops. It's well, there's two ways we talk about speakers: what we hear and what a microphone hears when you're measuring it. So from what we would hear, you'd think it's more scooped sounding. A lot of that has to do that you usually hear four at a time in a big 412, and there's a lot of air, so it's going to give a lot of low end punch. But yeah, the classic Lead 80 or when you say K100 or the
K100. Well, I told him in the chat room that the K100 is the one they make now.
Yeah, we make.
I have a K85,
right?
G12K. It's an older one.
Yeah, the K. Yeah, we have so many. Yeah, so you're right. We have a lot because I got confused. So the K100, the K85 basically is the K. You know, now the K100.
Right.
The T75 is going to be a little more scoop sounding by comparison. So when you ask about top end or high end,
right?
I'd say the T. I don't know if the T75 has more, but you hear it more because there's a bit lack of mid-range.
Let me ask you this, since you mentioned, and that's another thing you have to take and consider, because these guys are, some of them are using 2x12 cabinets. One guy was mentioning a 1x12 cabinet.
Right.
How do you know the difference in terms, you know, because, yeah, if everybody was using a 4x12, that's right, you're going to get a little more low-end response from that much air moving, but how would you gauge it? How does one look at these speakers and look at it as a one speaker setup as opposed to a four speaker? Do you need to take into account that with four speakers it's going to sound a lot different?
Yeah, I mean it's about the cabinet. Cabinets make speakers, closed back cabinets or ported cabinets make speakers behave in almost a different way. I mean, an open back cab, you have about 30% shooting out the back of your cabinet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which, you know, like if you're playing an open back cabinet at home, move it a foot away from the wall, because now you're just making a really bad open back or closed back cabinet. You know, if it's flat up against the wall, so you know your wife doesn't trip on it, you know, make you sell it. But I mean, if you have it too close to the wall, that's no bueno. You want to move it away from the wall a little bit and actually let it breathe, because an open back by design does certain things really nice, like creates a bit of that surround and bounces off that back wall, but if you don't give it any room to bounce. So, yeah, I mean, the low end and all that, I mean, if you took a T75 out of a standard Marshall 412 and put it in a 112 combo or a Fender, it's really cool. I mean, a lot of people think it's just for the 412, but it's a speaker. You can put it in anything, but it's going to make it behave different. You're probably going to hear a bit more mid-range if you used it in a more traditional small combo versus a big 412.
Now, I wanted to ask you something. I had mentioned this before when we were at the Pedal Expo. Years ago, I was doing a session, and the studio had its own Plexi Marshall. It was an old one with, like, the Lead 100 on the front of it and the old type of grill cloth.
You should have took it.
I wish. I asked for it, but right. No, they kept it. The guy was a guitar player. He wouldn't let it go.
Okay.
But anyway, I noticed that amp, it had a darker color. It just sounded, it had like a real bluesy, it didn't sound like what I've typically you think of as a Marshall. It was a real deep, almost like a jazzy sound. Right. And I cranked it up, and it had a great distortion, but it was a darker. Were they made different back then, the speakers, or why is that? I mean, I've heard that before, that people, you know, these older amps, the older speakers were darker.
Right.
What's your take on that?
Well, the myth buster is that a lot of what you heard, being that you were in the room with it, was the fact that the grill cloth makes a huge difference. I mean, it's going to attenuate the high end, you know, 20%. You know, or better, you know, in some cases. But I mean, that early basket weave, you know, material used on the old Marshalls and other brands, it was like putting a blanket, you know, a burlap, you know. So if just for fun, take a thicker bit of material and drape it over your 412 next time, or or your combo and just see what it does to your sound. And it's going to...
Oh, wow.
You know, people thought the speakers were warmer. I mean, the fact is, you know, everybody loves the sound of vintage, you know, old speakers. But it's funny that most of today's tone gods, for lack of better terms, reload before each tour. So Frampton and Richard Fortus from Guns N' Roses, a lot of these guys, Dave Amato from REO Speedwagon, he'll do two tours, and then he reloads with T75s. He just likes the good classic, you know, speaker his Marshall came with. But, yeah, I mean, your grill cloth makes a huge difference. Jimi Hendrix used new speakers. His speakers weren't built in the 40s, you know, I mean, you know, and he was using new speakers and a coil cable of some sorts and a fuzz face and a you know, a non-master volume 100-watt head and a Strat. I mean, that thing, in person, it might have taken your head off. I mean, those old amps were pretty bright, and you turn them up, but he was using the H-magnets in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. Most cases, that's what he's known for, because with the single-coil pickup, it had some beef. It sounded, you know, the low end was there. But, you know, back when he was being recorded, you had those big analog consoles and old tube preamps, and so there's a lot of warmth put into the project, if you will, just by default of the equipment. But yeah, in your studio situation, definitely the grill cloth.
So I had a question for you. So one of the things you had mentioned, you had said you had some really good tips on when you put in a new speaker in an amp. How do you get it to sound like it's not a new speaker? Like it's get rid of that new sound.
Yeah. Well, one thing we don't suggest, and I know where you're going, but you know, I know where you're going with that. So, but I got to be careful because I don't want to put, you know, the knives in the hands of everybody and tell them to go, you know, battle in the streets. It's you got to be careful when you do it. But yeah, there's a few tricks. I mean, we tell people do not put them on tone generators, do not put them on variacs. The best way to put break in a speaker first, before I totally answer that question, is to put it in, play it. We do not personally endorse having other people, you know, breaking in speakers for people. That's like me wearing your slippers around the house for a week and then giving them to you and say they're ready. The fact is, they're going to be broken into my feet, not yours. And,
right.
And the life they live has a lot to do with what they're going to give 30 years later. And so you can take four old 412 cabinets and they're going to sound different from a guy who's playing in a smoky bar with 12 pints of beer spilled on them over the years versus somebody who kept it in their closet. Yeah, I mean, people say you can mist a little bit of water on a new cone, and that'll, you know, especially if you're in a critical session and you're halfway through and something goes sideways and you lose a speaker, just to dampen it. But I, you know, guys, don't go throw your speaker in the pool. Just literally a spray bottle and just a one or two little mist, because humidity or moisture is the biggest effect on tone. You know, I talk to touring players all the time, and they're like, yeah, last night we played Miami, it was real muggy outside and thunderstorms, and my sound was much darker and muddier and didn't really cut. And then, you know, a day later they're playing in Phoenix and it's 105 outside, dry heat, and that paper becomes very brittle and it's harsher, yeah. It's brighter. So, I mean, that's a huge, huge thing. You know, the amperage out of your wall. I mean, there's so many things that contribute to how your amp behaves and why the next day it suddenly doesn't sound the same. But, you know, yeah, you can break in your speaker. I suggest, you know, some people will put their iPod on and loop it through. But, yeah, a few tricks. One of them is hitting it with just a little bit of mist of water, and that's helpful.
Mm.
But it's... you know, there are several things that people do. There's just some things that we cringe at a little bit when they do it. So,
Can you tell our listeners if they're on a budget, how would you recommend if they wanted to change their sound or upgrade their sound using selection speakers? Where would you recommend them to go?
First thing you do is identify which artist you like. You know, if you're a Vintage 30. I mean, if you're a Slash fan or you know, several other guys. I mean, you go to Vintage 30. If you know you like Brad Paisley and more of the chicken picking, he uses blues or golds. So the first thing you want to do is, you know, I mean, if you love Slash, you don't go buy a Princeton and a compressor. I mean, you're going to want to probably get more of a British sounding amp, a Marshall type of amp, and vintage 30s and a Les Paul. You know, I mean, that's going to get you, and then practice a lot. And then, you know, and Brad Paisley, he brought a different kind of thing to the Nashville scene, which when he was using his Vox amps, and then, you know, it was Dr. Z's, and of course, as time has gone on, he's got his train wrecks and several other toys, but you kind of want to identify with their rig, and then, you know, but some of those artists from back in the day are coming back chasing how they got that sound the first time, because it was just the right studio on the right day, power out of the wall was really good, and, you know, they couldn't find the amp that Slash initially used at SIR or whatever it was, you know, they rented to do Appetite for Destruction. And
right.
Then, you know, they sussed it out, and now that, you know, Marshall came out with a really cool Slash amp, the AFD, and it does a great job. But there was a time there when it was a bit of a mystery, so.
We had one question off of the chat room that I don't know if you can cover this before the show ends, but what's the best way to clean a speaker? The cones, specifically.
Yeah, the cones themselves. I mean, you can take a sponge or something non-fibrous where you're not going to lose, you know, because the pulp of the cone can pull some of the stuff off. But yeah, if you take like a clean, like a terry cloth cleaning rag, something that's real soft and supple, and just you could get it just a little bit wet and just wipe and don't. Don't put pressure in, because if you crease a cone, you'll be bummed out.
I used to use but not directly, like an air duster and just blow it lightly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Air, as long as it's not direct, you know, as long as you're not plugging in Dad's compressor and lighting it up with 120 PSI.
Cans.
Yeah, you just get the dust cans like you do for the computers, and that's great. And so I got one tip real quick. Can I say one thing?
Sure, sure.
I'll make it fast. I get people ask about cone cry, and cone cry, I'm going to make this really quick because it can go, cone cry, you take a rock, throw it out in the middle of a steel lake, and you see the ripples travel away, okay, and they go equally. What you want to do, most often cone cry is, it can be a thing that happens with the amp, but quite honestly, it's the frequency is traveling too perfectly from the center of the speaker to the outer edge of the cone. You want to disturb that. One little trick I've learned, if you purposely just give one side of the frame a little bit of an extra tight and purposely disrupt those frequencies from going off, boom, fixed cone cry.
There you go.
See? There you go.
Okay.
Well, we definitely want to thank Rick for coming in today and talking about Celestion speakers.
It's been awesome. Thanks.
And definitely want to thank Celestion for providing the Vintage 30 to give away today. For next week, we have our guest will be Denny Tedesco, from the director and producer of the movie The Wrecking Crew,
Right, we're going to be talking about The Wrecking Crew, the rhythm section that basically started rock and roll. They did all the Beach Boys, all sorts of the Monkees, you name it. They did all the early hits.
Nice.
So that's next week. He'll be in studio, so prepare your questions and give him a call. I want to thank you for listening. Tune in next time.
Good night, everybody.
Peace.